Welcome back to Our Queer Experience, where we seek to highlight the diversity among the LGBTQ+ community. I'm Bruce, joined by my co-host, Andre.
Hey, y'all. We're also joined tonight by entertainment aficionado Tommy Gerazzi. Tommy's mission in life is to spread positivity and social goodwill through various forms of media, including television, theater, and modern forms of media like this podcast. We are so happy to have you here.
I'm so glad to be here. It's good to meet you guys, and it's good to get to know more about you.
In the next episode, we'll talk a lot about Tommy's work in Hollywood, including his work on the Emmy-nominated show Eastsiders. But as usual with our guests, in today's episode, we'd like to delve into his personal story. So, Tommy, if you don't mind sharing a little bit, where are you from?
I was born in Brooklyn, New York, and I now live in Queens, New York most of the time. But I try to travel to L.A. at least every other month because it's in my blood and I need to be there. So it's become like it used to be 3 times a year, then it was 4 times a year, then it was 6 times a year. So I just go every other month at this point.
Oh, wow. Coast to coast.
Mm-hmm. The only way to be.
That's certainly one way to live. Why do you say LA's in your blood? What do you mean by that?
I had never been there before, and then I think in 2009, I just decided to go there on a trip. And when I was a kid, I used to always say that I wanted to live there, and people used to say to me, but you've never been there. You don't know what you're talking about. But when I got off the plane for the first time, it just felt like I was going home. It was a really weird feeling. Like, I got there, and I was like, wow, this is so comfortable. I wasn't worried about being in a new city. I wasn't worried about getting around. It just felt like almost like I had been there before, and I had never been there.
Oh, so it's just an immediate kindredness once you got off that plane.
Yeah, I think because growing up, I was always so into Hollywood and so into TV and things that went on behind the scenes and where everything was coming from. So I kind of knew that was the Mecca, so to speak. And then it kind of was in my blood already. So it was a really odd feeling. And people even were saying to me, like, how could you be so good at getting around here already? I was like, I don't know, it kind of felt like I've been here already. So I knew everything. It was weird.
That's so cool. And so I guess the first kind of question that we have is, how did you get into entertainment? What, it sounds like it's been a driving passion of your whole life, but what kind of sparked it and what continues it now?
I think growing up, I just always was into television, and I liked knowing about the people behind the things that I was watching. So it wasn't enough for me just to watch a television show. I needed to know something about the stars, about their personal life, about where they had come from, what they had done before. I was really fascinated by how everything was put together and the fact that they were playing roles, but yet it could be different from their actual life or how they were brought up. And then I just started, like, growing up, I always said that people were playing cops and robbers, and I was playing Entertainment Tonight. So I was always imagining myself interviewing people and going behind the scenes for things. So that was like a natural progression. And then I was always, even in as young as like fifth grade, I was always the one that people would say, you know, what are you watching on TV now? What are you into? And I would come in the next day after watching something and discuss it with people and talk about what we had watched together or what they should be watching. I just was always into sharing what I loved with other people as far as entertainment would go. And it was a very natural thing. And then when social media came about and I started tweeting on Twitter, I would naturally tweet about what I was watching, what I was doing, and then that became the blog.
Ah, so cool. So it's, you've always just kind of been the it kid, and now you're the it guy, I guess, not that you're not a child anymore.
We're always a child at heart, yeah. But yeah, I mean, I was the one that people came to for things after a while because they were like, well, you kind of know, you're plugged in, so what should we watch tonight? And I was like the TV guide.
That's so awesome. So it's so cool to see your passion kind of just continue and grow and develop and blossom in such a way.
Yeah, I mean, and the other thing too was like I would tell people why they should admire certain people. Like, let's say I could remember watching the original Murphy Brown, and people would be like, oh, I love that show, and I love Candace Bergen. But I would always find out things about Candace Bergen and be like, you know, she was a model at one time. You know, she was in film. You know, she was, like, she's bigger than just the TV actress that you see, and these are the causes that she's into. I always was into knowing that the people actually had some kind of social good passion behind everything, and I liked that.
Speaking personally, Tommy, I'm sorry to interrupt you.
No, please.
So speaking personally, I always looked at Hollywood as, I mean, it's the only place that I saw, like, gay characters and gay out people. You know, I mean, I grew up in rural West Virginia. I didn't really see that. Is that, I guess in New York, maybe you had a different experience, or what originally attracted you to?
Me personally, growing up, I'm from an Italian family that's also Catholic, so I didn't really have a lot of contact with the gay culture or anything. My father had a cousin who was gay, and the only thing I remember about that was that if he would visit, for some reason the family wouldn't let him stay in the same room as his boyfriend. So I remember growing up and thinking that, wow, that's horrible. That's the person that he loves, but they don't let them sleep in the same room together when they visit. So I wasn't really familiar with anything to do with gay culture until later on in life. But watching television and being in Hollywood culture, I kind of knew about it, but I wasn't living it. So that was the way that I kind of explored that by television. And I always knew, even when I was a kid, that there was something going on with me, because I would be watching all these shows and I would have a crush always on the male characters. And the female characters, which I just admired, like their fashion, their style, but I wasn't necessarily having crushes on any of the girls.
Mm-hmm. Did you, I guess not only even, did you come out later in life, or?
Yeah, I did. When I was older, I came out, and probably the biggest thing that I did was on social media, because I felt like whoever didn't know by then, I needed to just let them see by me living my authentic life on Facebook and Twitter that this was me, and they'd have to deal with it or not. Like that, it was, I left everything up to everybody. If they were going to accept me, they would accept me, and if they were going to decide they didn't want to talk to me anymore, that was fine. But I figured social media was the best way to do it.
What was it like telling your family?
I told my family, they were okay. I think actually when I told my family and my close friends, they already knew. They had always known, most likely, and they were just waiting for me to come out. And I wasn't ready until I was ready. And that's the thing that I never tell people to do. I don't think you should out anybody. Like, I remember during American Idol when David Hernandez was on, and he's actually a bit of a friend of mine now, but I remember when he was on, people were making such a big deal about the fact that they thought he was gay, but he wasn't coming out. And then some of the gay community actually were doing posts and shaming him a bit. And I thought, you know, if he's not ready to come out, then it's not your place to tell him when he's ready to come out. He will come out when he's ready to come out. And he will come out when he's prepared and capable of doing it. I think when you out somebody or you push them out like that, I don't know if it's healthy mentally. I don't think that, you know, it's like telling somebody that all of a sudden you're going to be an athlete today. I mean, I never ran a marathon, but now I have to run a marathon. You have to kind of pace them and let them pace themselves and let them tell you.
Yeah, I think we both can totally agree with that. So we actually, it's a conversation Bruce and I have had several times on the show. What, as someone who is out and in the media industry, what do you kind of see as a balance between wanting to keep your personal life personal and obligation to the community to be visible and out there?
I think the obligation always comes from, no matter who you are or how big your audience is, you have a voice. And I think when you're faced with the opportunity to use your voice, you should always take it and not be silent about things that, you know, affect the community that you belong to. And you should never, ever think that your community is too small. Because some people are like, oh, I only have a couple hundred followers on Twitter. Well, that's okay. If those couple hundred people are actually engaged with you and listening to you, then you can affect those couple hundred people's lives. And in that group of 100, 1,000, 10,000, 50,000, you may have people there that don't even realize that these things are going on in the world. Some people may not even be familiar firsthand with anyone who's in the LGBTQ community. So you may actually open people's eyes. You may they think about things. So every time we have a chance to use our voice, we have that responsibility, because there are people out there who are oppressed, who cannot come out, who cannot live their true self because they live in places where there would be dire consequences for that. And I feel like it's almost criminal for us not to use our voice if we can.
Cool beans. So how do you balance, like, if someone knows and has come out to themselves, but doesn't quite feel right coming out publicly, do you think that they should choose to come out publicly, or is that still kind of their own choice at that point? It's something that I think many of us wrestle with, that question.
The only thing I would say to somebody like that is that most of the times the stress that you have over it is mostly created in your mind, and it's going to be a lot easier than you think it's going to be in most cases, because, like I said, most of the people around me already knew. And even now when we talk about it with my friends, they're like, yeah, we were just waiting for you to say it. And they already accepted me before I even asked them to accept me. So a lot of times I think we create this, like, turmoil, and then you need to figure out who your core group is and who the people you can really trust are and come out to them first. Because I think once you have that support system, the rest of it just comes naturally, and then you will realize that you need to be yourself, and whoever's going to accept that is fine, and whoever isn't going to accept that is fine as well, and you just need to know where you stand with each person, and you're going to lose people, probably, and that's okay, because the people that you lose aren't able to accept you, and you really don't want, why would you want people in your life that can't accept you for who you really are and what you really are? So we also have to realize that there are people who live in places where, like, if they do come out, it could be life-threatening. So those people, of course, I'm not going to say to them, oh, you have to come out. You have to, you know, you need to go to the town square and announce this. No, you don't. If it's threatening your life, then you do need to keep it quiet, but then you need to figure out a way to get out of that situation, to move, to go somewhere else, because at the end of the day, we're only here for a certain amount of years, and we should be able to live our lives the way that makes us happy.
Yeah, I think there are definitely folks in places where coming out can threaten their lives and livelihood and other such things. Some folks choose to stay and fight against that. Some folks choose to leave it. I think it's up to each person to kind of find their call into what to do with that situation.
Whatever's going to make them happy, for sure. It's all about happiness.
That's kind of what the philosophy you live by?
Yeah, now I do. Because I think that looking back, too, I wish I had come out earlier, because I think I would have been happier.
Can you kind of elaborate on that?
Just that in the years that I wasn't being my authentic self, I think I was even lying to myself at times, because I was trying to be something that I wasn't. I was trying to be something that was pleasing everyone else, but it really wasn't pleasing me. So had I done it younger, I think if I had come out in high school or maybe even earlier, I would have found my tribe earlier. And I mean, I know you really, life is given to you, and you do things for, everything happens for a reason. So I probably came out when I was completely ready, but I just look back a lot of times and go, well, if I had come out in high school, then I would have had that many more years of being what I am now, which I'm very proud of. So, you know, hindsight is always a bitch. That's all I can say.
And now that you live in Brooklyn and bounce between Brooklyn and LA, how do you maintain a personal life, since it seems that you're so devoted to your work life?
Yeah, right now it's difficult because I'm back and forth a lot, but you meet people everywhere, and I do believe that if you find the right person, then a long-distance relationship is fine. I mean, as long as you get to see each other. Like, if I was traveling back and forth to LA every other month anyway, I would be able to see the person. But I also think that when I do finally find the person I'm going to settle down with, that'll dictate where I spend more of my time as well. It'll give me a reason to stay in one place or the other.
Yeah, makes sense.
But they can't expect me to clip my wings either. I always say that whenever I find somebody I'm going on a few dates with them, I always say to my friends, I'm like, well, I just don't want them to clip my wings at all. So they're going to have to understand that I do like to travel, and they can come with me. And if I have to go by myself sometimes, that's fine too. But I just need to find the person who can respect that and deal with that.
Yeah. So if you don't mind our asking, because we're always curious, and I'm single, Bruce is not, but how do you go about dating? Since you're big in Hollywood and people know who you are. Isn't that difficult?
No, not at all, because I actually find that I meet more people like this. And a lot of times when you're in situations where you're at an event or you're at a social in a social setting, you'll meet someone and just hit it off, and then that might lead to a date or two or three. And I've had relationships, too, that have lasted a few years, and I've met those people through mutual friends or going to different events, or sometimes I meet people online, but I don't know, because the apps to me don't really seem to work for me personally. But I know people who've married people from apps, so who knows? But for me, it's just more in person is usually works for me. If I've met you in person and we've actually hung out a little bit, I always feel like I know more about you.
And so now, like, are you – not everyone puts dating as, I guess, a top of priority as I do.
It's important because –
So are you even looking? Are you kind of focused on the professional life? Because, you know, that's a balance we all have to strike, right?
I never say no, so to experiences, new experiences. So I'm not going to say that I'm not looking ever, but I'm not aggressive about it, I guess. I feel like I would want to be friends with somebody first. I want to go on a date. There's a few people that I'm interested in that I talk to regularly, but so far, you know, that's going to have to, that'll develop to what it's going to develop, and it'll become what it becomes. But I don't force anything. I feel like if you start forcing things, then you get into, like, situations where you may be too pushy, too aggressive. You may be forced in situations that really shouldn't be. So I let things happen. I always let things happen the way they're going to happen.
Cool. That's a great attitude that I'm still struggling with.
Oh, I struggle with it, too, because sometimes you meet the person and you're like, a lot of times you become not obsessed, but infatuated with someone, and then that becomes what you're all about for a little while, and it almost can be unhealthy because then you're not, you may miss out on something else, especially if it's not meant to be. If something's not meant to be, you have to just let that go, and then something else that's supposed to be can happen. But I struggle with that too, because the ideal of it is to, you meet somebody like, oh, this would be so perfect. We would be the perfect couple. We would have this. We would have that. But you're kind of just like getting yourself into that spiral. So let it just happen. And then when it happens, you know, you can live it. But obsessing over it doesn't make sense.
For sure. I think that is, I know as someone who is single, it's cool to hear someone who's successful and self-confident and all around pretty, like, monogamous be like, oh, yeah, I struggle with, like, not getting carried away and this too. And so I think for a lot of our listeners, it's also reassuring to know that, hey, even the most sociable person can struggle with these same things that we do.
Yeah, we're all the same. Actually, we're all human beings. So every human being has similar – we kind of walk similar paths, whether or not 10 people know us or 100,000 people know us. We still have the same struggles as human beings.
Exactly. And speaking of struggles, something else that we always like to ask is thinking about – you've had – whether it's personal or professional, we've all had setbacks. So for you, what's a big setback you've had to overcome? And then what advice do you give to other folks who may be struggling?
I always feel like setbacks happen for a reason. And anytime I've had a setback, it always led me into something else that I enjoy or actually was even better than the other one. I've had a few work relationships where it didn't mesh, like the personalities weren't working out. And so you have to decide at that point, do you walk away from it or do you try to fix it? Or is it something that like the other person just will never align with your thinking? And I always try to say that you have to have your values straight too, because especially before you're going to get involved in anything that is in the public arena, you have to have your values straight and you have to see those values because otherwise you'll be led astray all over the place. So I've had situations where another person might not be doing things the way that I would do it, and even times where people aren't doing things on the up and up, and I have to say, you know, whoa, my reputation could be ruined here if I'm associating with this person for much longer, so now I have to get out. And then getting out is always weird because you're like, well, if I get out, we're doing all these things and we have all this stuff coming up and I'm going to lose these opportunities. But at the same time, do I want those opportunities if they're being done the wrong way, or do I just want to go and try to make new opportunities the way that feels comfortable for me? So I usually choose to do it the comfortable way and to always keep everything authentic and real. And I just prefer it that way. But as long as you have your value system set, then you can pretty much get through most things that go on. Plus, you have to have a good core group of friends that keep you motivated and keep you from sliding into depression when it comes to things like that, because everyone's going to suffer a setback and everyone's going to kick themselves in the ass over it and just become like obsessed with the fact that now you failed and you're going to be afraid to do another thing. But you have to, you can visit there for a little while, but you can't live there. So you got to say, okay, this is the time limit that I'm going to give myself to mourn over this setback, this loss, and then I'm going to pick myself up and I'm going to go on. And a really good friend of mine who passed away a few years ago, actually, she used to do that with me, where she'd be like, okay, this happened to you, you have to deal with it, and I'm giving you until 3 months from now to deal with it, and then we're not going to talk about this anymore, and you're just going to get on to the next thing. And I'm like, but I don't think I can do that. And she's like, yes, you can, and you will. And she would stick to that. So she said, okay, you can complain about it, you can cry about it, you can be upset over it, but I'm only giving you a time limit to do that, and I don't want to hear it anymore.
And having that time limit really helped.
Yeah, because it kind of, and she would do that. So if I went beyond that limit, she'd be like, okay, listen, I've heard this already, and I understand why you're feeling this way, but now it's time to figure out what you're going to do next and what you're going to do to get over that. So now your time is up. So now it's time to shift your thinking. And it would actually work. So it was kind of like daring me to do it, and I felt like, okay, well, I'm going to prove that I can do this.
That's really cool. I think one of the big takeaways from your advice is to knowing your values part. I think
I think a
lot of folks mention, oh, you need to know yourself. But you really hit the nail on the head of saying, like, you not only need to know yourself, but you also need to know what you stand for and what you want.
Right.
So how did you find your value set?
I think it was my upbringing was part of it, and then the people that I was around, too. And really the important thing, too, is once I came out, I realized that, because growing up, it was always, being gay was like this horrible thing. So I always felt like everybody would think I was this horrible person when I finally did come out. And I knew all along, but I was afraid to say it because of that. Because I felt like once I say it, then everybody's going to judge me. And when I came out and I realized that that's not true, and I absolutely started to realize that there were so many people in the community that you can look up to who have amazing values and who do amazing things in the world, then that helped to make me realize I was a good person and that I had my own values already set up. So it's okay that I was brought up Catholic because I learned compassion. I learned spirituality from that. I may not agree with the religion part, but I have my spirituality set and I have morals. So those things were a part of me all along anyway. And that's how I knew my values. And you also have it in you. You have that feeling, that gut feeling about things. When something feels wrong, it usually is wrong.
Thank you so much for coming on today and sharing so much of your personal story with us, Tommy.
You're welcome.
We look forward to the second part of this conversation where we get to really hone in on Hollywood and what's it like to be gay out in the land of movies and television. So it's going to be super exciting.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here. Absolutely.
So, Bruce?
Come back on Monday. It'll be a good show.
Bye, y'all. Bye.